Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you here, grateful that you're listening right now and that you are here to improve your life through habit change and identity change and learning about how to be the healthiest, well, maybe not even the healthiest, just how to really make progress in your life and in your goals. I did a podcast episode a couple of months ago called Mantras and Mindsets because I had a realization that the things that I believe are what allow me to keep fighting every single day of my life through a lot of struggle, through things being difficult, through constant problems and stresses, and to make significant sustained changes. And I don't think I would be able to stand in front of you today and talk about this if I didn't have a mindset that is most likely different to a lot of people. And it's almost like you can't know what your bias is until you realize that there is a different way of looking at things. And this is prompted by a conversation that I had with a friend of mine recently. And they were talking about how they, career-wise, have had a lot of failures. They haven't really found what they want to do yet. They've tried many, many different things. And now they're walking towards a career path that I think is the best one that they've thought of so far. Definitely has the most potential. And they were scared of this idea of committing and going all in because everything they've tried in the past hasn't worked. And it's failed. And my friend was explaining to me that she feels this sense of, if she tries this thing and it doesn't work again, it's going to be another notch in her belt that she can't trust herself, that she can't make good decisions. And so as we were examining this, we're sitting down, we're having coffee, and I'm thinking and I'm processing this. I'm like, man, I have a very fundamentally different view of life than this. I have an extreme opposite, if you will, outlook on everything that's transpired up until this point. And what we identified was that a lot of her thought behavior is right or wrong decision making. And we were sitting at a coffee table. There's two little tables put together. We had our dirty coffee mugs there. Long conversation, many, many hours. And I just put one of the cups on one side of the table and I put another cup on the other side of the table. And I was like, hey, so your decision making, you thinking about decision making, is it's either in or out. You've got to make a good decision or you've made a bad decision. And there's only one or the other. It's this binary process. And if you don't have the information, you're just guessing. And then every time it's you just deciding, okay, I failed again. I made a bad decision again. I was like, what if instead we looked at it this way? So we lined up all the coffee cups, we lined up the saucers, we lined up all of the spoons, everything that we had on the table. And we started at the beginning and I was like, okay, so this is you when you first started to make some of these decisions. You first tried one thing. What was it? Okay, that didn't work. Then you tried something else. When you made the decision about the second thing that you wanted to do, career-wise or just interest-wise, did you learn from the first experience? Did you make decisions based on the fact that you had more opportunities to succeed in the second one? There was more job opportunity, there was more earning potential. It wasn't so hard to break into the industry. Did you use what you'd learned from the first failure? Okay, so you progressed, right? Like, you didn't make another bad decision, you progressed on the first one. And then we went along further and further down the line until we got to this decision that she's thinking about right now, and realized that every single decision And every single failure that she'd had up until that point was something that she'd built on and learned from. And now going into this decision, whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant, first of all, but everything that she's learned is much, much more informed. She has a much better way of making decisions, not good or bad, just better. Spectrum, not binary, because of the experience that she's had. So none of those things are useless. None of them are worthless. And the thing that it just really solidified it to me is if I had that mindset, I'd be screwed. And the only thing, only reason that I haven't given up so far is because I don't. That when obstacles come up and when I do the same, what seems to be the same mistake, or I don't succeed. It's not even the same mistake, but there's some reason that I don't succeed. Same thing over and over and over and over again. That as long as I'm learning from those things, then I am moving forward and I see myself as moving forward, because I think that failure is okay. And I think that that is a big part of success. I think we just have to try things a million more times, learn what we don't like, learn what is not going to work, make decisions that are improved decisions, learn from our mistakes, and then and move on. But why this matters so flippin' much is that if we hadn't had that conversation, I wouldn't even know the way that I think about life. And so if you're listening to this right now, there are biases that you hold. There are mindsets and there are mantras. When I say mantras, we're talking about the things that you say to yourself internally. There will be things that you don't even know you believe that you believe that are going to be holding you back from getting to where you want to go. And we want to break them down at the most fundamental level and really just ask the question, is that true? Does it get me to where I want to go? And do I really want to continue to believe that? And if not, then we can put things in place and we can start to break that thought pattern by an intentional action practice. But the things that have helped me, I've been like getting them all out, brainstorming them all out. The first podcast went over a lot. Fail Faster, from what you've probably heard, is a huge one for me. Radical responsibility is also huge. Hard, difficult, stressful, uncomfortable doesn't equal negative. And environment shapes behavior a ton more than willpower. But there's some other things, and I'm excited to share with them with you today. And if it breaks some beliefs, great. And if it doesn't, then so be it. The first one is that in order to get lucky, we have to increase luck surface area. There's this razor that I think is really cool. And it says, it's this idea that people who consistently get lucky while others struggle with bad luck their whole lives are the ones who put themselves in an area, a surface area, if you will, in an arena, if you will, where they are able to be in a position where luck could strike them. And the luck razor goes like this. When choosing between two paths, choose the path that has the larger luck surface area. Because there's a lot of things that are outside of our control in terms of luck. Where we're born, who we're born to, acts of God, if you will. And all of these things are outside of our control. But beyond that, the surface area of the luck that we have is actually within our control. And people who tend to get lucky or identify as lucky people, they understand this. And let me share a little story with you to illustrate what I'm talking about and make this feel really, really clear. So today I had an amazing opportunity to do a podcast interview with Carly from Plant You. She has a huge Instagram, YouTube presence, helps people to create very easy, low-waste recipes on a plant-based diet. Absolutely beautiful, wonderful human. And we have that podcast coming out in the next couple of weeks to coincide with her book launch that is happening. And if you think about it, you could go, you know what, I'm really lucky that someone reached out to me and they were like, hey, do you want to have this chick on your podcast? And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Like, that feels lucky. I didn't really do anything to do that. But in saying that, this is a podcast that now has 20 to 30,000 downloads a month. This is a podcast that now has over 1,000 reviews. And by the way, I'd really appreciate it if you go give it another one. I read every single review and I do flip and appreciate them. This is a podcast that not only has seen some success, but that I have shown up and recorded an episode pretty much every single week. There's been a few weeks that I have missed. Last week it was one of them. But pretty much without a break for the last 3 years. And that this podcast now has over 150 episodes. That's a lot of hours. So if I've got to go, hey, how could I get an opportunity like having the privilege to interview someone like Carly? Well, I'd probably have to increase my luck surface area in the podcast space by putting out a lot of episodes. How am I going to get good at creating a podcast? Well, I'd probably have to do it hundreds of times, even when I didn't want to, when I was literally crying by the thought of having to do an episode and crying because I filmed it all and the sound was off, or that I listened back and it sounded terrible, or that someone emailed me and told me a problem that they had with it that made me want to quit. If I was going to really get lucky, I'd really have to do something about it. I'd have to increase my luck surface area. And so the luckiest people have engineered an enormous amount of luck surface area. And so you can expand your own luck surface area by two things. The first one is to remove anti-luck. So remove actions, behaviors, people that shrink your luck surface area. And think about this simply in the context of whether you stay on plan with your diet. If you have people who consistently bring around food that you don't want to eat, if you have a route to work that there's McDonald's drive-thrus on the way there, if you have people in your life that the way that they do things is they go out and drink every weekend and they vape and they smoke and they do drugs, and that's not who you want to be, then those things are not allowing you to, they're anti-luck. And then the second one is add pro-luck things. So these are the actions, behaviors, and the people that expand your luck surface area. So if you want to meet someone, for example, you can go, hey, well, maybe I'll get lucky and I'll go to a coffee shop and then someone will talk to me and I'll meet my soulmate. Well, yeah, that possibly could happen. But which is a greater surface area in terms of luck? Would it be actually you having a conversation with people that you met that you thought looked interesting? Would it be you going to events where eligible people are? Would you be more likely to get lucky in meeting your soulmate by going to places where they could potentially be and talking to potential people? Or would it be by sitting at home and knitting? Nothing against knitting and nothing against being single. If you want to do that, then that's totally fine. But if you're wanting a goal and you're not putting yourself in terms of a luck surface area, then you're kidding yourself about how this actually works. And this is why I have this idea that everything is really just a numbers game. Which brings me to my second mindset and mantra, I guess, if you will, is consistent violent action beats everything else. Because if you put in your reps, and I always think this to myself, I just need to get in the reps. I just need to do it more. Volume and violence. Violent volume over absolutely everything. And action is over belief, over mindsets, over feelings. Because if I do it long enough and I do it enough times and I put in enough hours, then my surface area of success is much, much, much greater. And you see this so evidenced by successful people. And this has really helped to break it for me. That I look at the people who invented things that changed the world. They tried so many things. I look at professional athletes and I look at how many more times they failed than other people have even tried. I look at successful business people and I look at how many hours they put in, how many meetings they went to. A lot of people in business started in sales. How many calls did they take? How many doors did they knock? If you were to go, hey, I am going to knock on every single door in my neighborhood in order to get someone to give me $10, is it more likely for you to get $10 because you knocked on every single door? I'm not saying go do this. I'm just using a really terrible analogy. But is it more likely that that happens than that someone comes to your door from your neighborhood and just randomly is like, someone told me I should come give you $10, or I just had this feeling from the universe that I should come give you $10? No. You create the luck that you have. And the way that you do this is through consistent violent action over everything. And repetition is where it's at. And most of the time, if we're not proficient at something and we're not seeing success at it, we just haven't done it enough times. I told myself this a lot at the beginning of my podcasting and YouTube journey, was that I needed to get out volume. And there's this great story that I love from, it comes from Atomic Habits, and there's a professor, an art professor, and he splits his class into two. And so the first group, they are the quality group. He says to them, I want you to produce one amazing work of art, a photography piece, over the next semester. That is your assignment. You do not have to create lots. You do not have to do anything else, just one piece. The other group was the quantity group. And so he said, you don't have to create an amazing piece. You just need to create 100 pieces and bring them to me. Over the course of the semester, the quantity group tried things, they took pictures, they experimented, and they got better. And so at the end of the semester, they had improved to the point where they actually had some really good works of art. Whereas the quality group had spent the entire time obsessing over how to do things to create one mediocre piece of work. And it makes sense when we think about it logically, because we teach our kids how to read. And we don't expect them to start with Dickens, we expect them to start with the ABC. And we expect that if their writing is poor, it's because they just haven't done it hundreds of times. But how much do we put that pressure on ourselves, or even just think that we should be able to do something without ever having done our 10,000 hours or 100,000 steps, or just doing something for enough repetitions that it would be reasonable that we could do it? Like, how many times do you try something, fail once, and then go, it means that I'm a failure. It means that I shouldn't do it because I'm not good at it. I heard this great thing on a reel last night, and I posted it on my Instagram stories, and it was this girl talking about how you can choose to either make failure temporary or permanent. And failure is just meaning that you haven't succeeded yet. You don't know that the next time that you try it, you don't know if you're going to be successful or not. The only way that you actually make failure permanent is you go, I'm not going to try anymore. Because maybe it's that 10th video that goes viral. Maybe it's the 100th video. Maybe it's the 1,000th. But if you stop at 9, you'll never know. And then if you get to 10 and you stop there because you thought that it was meant to happen at 10, then you'll never know either. Maybe you have to do 10,000 videos. The only way that you actually fail is if you do not consistently put in your reps. And this comes back to something else that I very, very strongly believe, is that action is above and greater than belief, mindsets, and actions, because and feelings, because action changes those things. You do not have to feel ready. You do not have to feel safe. You do not have to feel like you know what you're doing. You do not have to feel confident. You do not have to feel like your technique is right. You don't have to feel anything positive to take action. And in a lot of ways, a big mindset that has been very, very instrumental to me is that, like, screw my feelings. Screw the way that I feel about something. Because most of the time I wake up in the morning and I don't feel like I want to do anything. I feel like I want to go to a cafe and get a croissant. I feel like I want to lay in bed. I do a podcast and I feel crap about it. I feel like I hate it. Does it mean that it's actually bad? No. It just means that that's the way I feel about it. The sun doesn't shine. Does it mean that the day is actually objectively terrible? No. Someone who's had too much sun is probably happy about it. We equate the way that we feel with negativity rather than just saying, hey, it's a feeling. We put so much emphasis on feeling good without even assessing whether feeling good is important. What if feeling terrible wasn't inherently negative? It just was an indication of something that you feel. Like, it's not physical pain. And someone can feel the same stimuli, someone can feel terrible and still make progress, whereas someone else feels terrible and they don't go into work the next day. Someone can be like, you know what, I feel like crap. And they can look at that objectively and they can go, you know what, I'm still going to move towards what's important to me. And someone else can go, you know what, because I feel that way, it means that I shouldn't do it. If I don't feel like working out, I'm not going to go and do it. It's like, well, I mean, what are we consuming in terms of content that we think that most people want to work out every day? Like, I don't want to go any day. The only way I get to the gym is because I remember that reps are important. And I go, success is not about quitting. Therefore, I will get my butt through the door and I will see what happens next. And even if I stay there for 5 minutes, it's okay because I just got to get my reps in. And screw my feelings. Don't matter. I think a lot of people are unhappy with their lives because they think that happiness and fulfillment is a goal. Whereas I believe that happiness and fulfillment is a byproduct. That it is not a goal to strive for. This is the other mindset that I have. I'm just going to go willy-nilly through all of these. And that difficulty fundamentally does not mean you have a bad life unless you decide that those are the rules of the game. Have you ever played a card game where something like Snap, where your goal, or maybe it's not Snap. There's card games where, or maybe even Monopoly. Let's talk about this. There are games where when you play, your goal is to acquire more. If you're a Monopoly, the goal of the game is to acquire more money. That's how you win, is to acquire more property. But if you play something like Scum, or as some people call President, which is a card game, the whole goal of the game is to get rid of the cards in your hand. So you win the game, but there's two very different rules associated with playing these two games. But the goal really is to win. But if we put on this very blanket worldview that because getting rid of hands or having a lack of cards is inherently bad, then we would never play the game to win, because we'd always be thinking that what actually allows us to win was bad, because we'd made a rule in our mind that any time you got rid of cards was bad, because how could you possibly play a game where if you weren't collecting resources, you weren't on the winning side? And a lot of people view life this way, where they look at difficulty and they look at struggle and they go, those things are bad. They say that those things are negative things. Why? Why did we decide that feeling sad is bad? I mean, just like we learned in Inside Out, and like how joy experience, sadness is not always inherently negative. You know that you love because you get sad. A lot of the time, my dad used to always say, sadness shows us that we love people. Loss and that feeling of grief, it shows us what we love. It shows us what we care and what we value. And I've had to reframe the way that I feel, and not even feel. Honestly, the feeling doesn't matter. But reframe the way that I see and analyze the thoughts and the feelings and the emotions that I have on a daily basis, and really push back when those emotions are talking to me stronger than what I believe to be true and what I've chosen to be true. That when I feel terrible about myself and I feel bad and I feel stressed and I feel overwhelmed, that is me going that my emotions are telling me something right now. My brain is telling me something right now. It's not telling me any objective truth. It's not telling me anything about real data. It's just telling me that it doesn't like the current state that I'm in. And I have an opportunity at that point to decide who I want to be and go, you know what, even though my brain is thinking this, even though my hormones and my emotions and everything else that's happening to me is causing me to feel these things, I am distinct from my feelings and I can choose to react how I want to. That I can feel crap and I can go, you know what, it's okay. I cannot tell you how much freedom this has had in my life, where I do not have to ascribe so much meaning to how I feel, or whether I feel good or whether I feel bad. And I'm not trying to avoid it anymore. I think that's the biggest thing, because I used to have this massive pain avoidance, especially around feelings, where if I was feeling terrible, I would want to do something to get out of that state. And I would want to work out for that reason, or I would want to go for a run, or I would want to do, well, whatever it was, like, I don't know, go shopping, eat some comfort food or any of that. And we're in a world where we've been told so much that it's not okay to feel bad about anything, and it's not necessary to feel any kind of emotional discomfort. So the minute we do, we seek to escape that. And the thing that's really helped me has been identifying that that's a pattern in my life, and instead sitting in it and going, you know what, I feel crappy right now, but it's okay. This is part of the human experience. And I don't like it, but it's okay that I don't like it. And this has helped me so much with dealing with the fact that Nick has a progressive condition. He has multiple sclerosis. He's in a wheelchair now. I've seen his symptoms get worse. I've seen his physical condition decline over the 10 years that we've been married. And there's been a lot of pain in that. There's been a lot of moments where I'm like, you know what? I can't cope. And then when I'm at a point, and I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the future? I probably will crumble at times. Like, I know that for a fact. But the something has switched in me where I can now analyze in those moments where I feel worse, where I go, you know what? I feel absolutely terrible. I feel so scared. I feel so like I can't handle this. But it's okay that I feel like that. Like, it's reasonable that I feel that way. And it's not inherently bad. Like, it is a normal, logical response to the stimuli, which is being in a hard situation where there is the potential, and well, I mean, the actual loss of someone, that they're declining in some way, shape, or form. And being like, that's okay. And it's really shifted, even in something as morbid as death, and thinking about, well, if Nick were to die, or when he was to die, whatever it looks like, old me was like, I can't cope with that. That's too hard. That's too painful. Whereas now I go, you know, it will be hard. It would be painful. It would feel like hell on earth. And that's, it is what it would be. That, yeah, it would feel that way. And that would be a reasonable response. And that I can feel like crap and be okay. That I can feel pain and I can feel loss and I can feel things being hard and I can be okay. And I can sit in it and I can not try and escape it and I can just live in it. And it's okay. And people use difficulty as reasons for not doing things all the time. There's a conversation that I have with someone, and pretty much every time I have a conversation with this person, they're in a very similar place that they were years ago when I talked to them. And they will say things like, oh, it's really hard to do this and it's really hard to do that. And I always want to say, well, yeah, so? And? Like, so what? Why does hard have to be a factor? It's only because we've described it as something negative. We're not saying, hey, I'll be in pain if this happens. We're not saying, hey, I'm going to lose my livelihood if this happens. We're just saying it's hard. What if we said it was purple? I always use this analogy. What if we said it was green? Like, it's meaningless. It's hard to go to the gym. Okay, well, the gym is also painted white. You're going to factor that into your decision making? It's hard to eat healthy. It's hard to say no. So? Yeah, you're right. It's hard. My kids say to me these things all the time. They're like, Mom, it's not fair. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Say more. Like, tell me about it. I know. Life is not fair. This is a big part of how I live my life, and I don't use hard as a reason for not doing something. Because the other thing, the other revelation that I had recently is that the times of the most struggle and the hardest seasons that I've had have actually, in retrospect, turned out to be some of the most fulfilling. And I think this is the paradox of life that C.S. Lewis talks a little bit about this in his book Mere Christianity, one of my absolute favorite books. If you're into theology, definitely give it a read. And he says that the man who thinks that he knows about temptation, who gave in after the first hour, knows far less than the person who didn't give in. You don't know about how difficult something is until you actually do it longer. And if you think it's harder for you to say no to cookies, and then you always just give in to saying cookies, you don't know how hard it is for you if for someone who never eats cookies. Because you have no idea, potentially, what the temptation is like to never have done something and never given in to it. Like, you only know your temptation up to the point that you gave in. It could have been a million times stronger had you waited another few days or another few years. And what I'm trying to say with that is that the paradox of all of this, when we think about life being difficult, we think about our feelings and we think about these things acting on us, that difficulty and stress and things being difficult and things not being easy and struggle, that those things actually tend to equate to the most fulfillment that we have in life. And mums, I know you that you can attest to that. It's not easy having kids. It's damn hard. It's also really, really fulfilling. It's also really, really rewarding. When I run half marathons and I've been training for half marathons, it's really hard. It's actually more rewarding than sitting on the couch and watching Netflix. Kind of funny, right? Kind of funny that doing hard things that and things that scare us and things that require us to get out of our comfort zone actually make us paradoxically feel better about ourselves most of the time. That most of the things that we don't want to do, when we actually do them and we face them, that we get a sense of fulfillment that comfort can never bring. And so if we're really on, and even what we think is happiness, because we're equating happiness with comfort and ease, don't make that mistake in your life. And this is when we're coming back to happiness and fulfillment as being a byproduct. If we're not seeking it, then it's much, much easier for us to stop equating it with comfort and difficulty. If we go, you know what, happiness is a byproduct. Fulfillment is a byproduct. What's the real goal? The goal is growth. The goal in some ways is the struggle of life. The goal is to be moving towards being the kind of person that you want to be. And only you can decide what that is. And yeah, it's going to be hard. Yeah, it's going to be scary. Yeah, you're not equipped to do it yet. But guess what? You haven't got the reps to be. There's this quote that I love from one of my favorite people, Alex Hormozy, and he talks, I won't be able to directly quote it, but he's like, do something long enough until it's boring. If you're scared of public speaking, but it's what you want to do, you think about how boring that would be after doing it 1,000 times, or if you did it every single day. I remember when I first started going on the pump track on a skateboard, and I would go there and I would just stand up there and I would wait on the little decline and wait at the hill and I'd be freaking out. And now I'm like, oh, like it's fun, but eh. Like there's no fear there. I did it long enough that it was boring. The only reason that it got boring was because I faced that fear and I actually did it. The more growth that I experience in my life, the more that I struggle for something worthwhile, the more that I fight and I live through hard for the cause to be who I want to be and fight for the things that matter, not just comfort, the more that I actually have fulfillment and happiness. And that's been really, really cool to recognize that I don't have to have a stress-free life. I don't have to have a comfortable life. I can be fulfilled and be under immense amounts of pressure every day. And a lot of that is really just how I see it, whether I'm going to see pressure and stress and all of those things as negative. And here's the thing, is like, you don't have to agree with me on this. But I want to ask you, which would be more helpful for you? Would it be more helpful for you to put so much meaning into feeling stressed and overwhelmed? Or would it be helpful for you to analyze and go like, hey, you know what? I feel bad today. Eh, so what? Carry on. Like, thank you. Next. Which would be more helpful for your life? Because there's this loop, which is called the feedback loop from hell, which Mark Manson talks about in his books, in his book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a... And he says that we get anxious because we're anxious. We're anxious about our anxiety and then we're anxious about that. And so this is why I'm really careful with the way that I speak to myself, where if something is difficult, I'm actively, this is where the mantras part comes in, I'm actively talking to myself. I'm like, Charles, you feel crap right now. Charles, you don't feel good. Charles, at the gym, did this yesterday, doing pull-ups. I'm like, man, this is hard. Man, I don't want to do this next one. This is going to be painful. It's going to be painful to be struggling up to get that last rep. I don't want to do it. I don't even want to try. And then I talk to myself, you know, like, I'm like, yeah, it'll be painful. That's okay. Come on, Charles. Like, yeah, it's going to feel sucky. Like, yeah, that's all right. That's fine. Like, embrace the suck. You got this. Struggling for another rep. What's the worst that can happen? You don't make it. That's fine. Like, so what? It's de-ammunizing. I don't know if that's actually a word. It's taking the ammunition out of the things that we think are negative just because we've decided that those are the rules of the game. So screw your feelings. Don't use hard as a reason. Decide what you want. Go all in for it. Embrace the fact that it is gonna suck, and that's fine. It doesn't matter. Embrace the fact that really being comfortable doesn't serve you. And I want you to think back to all the times where you've struggled the most. not in, and here's the big thing, there's purpose to struggle when it is leading us closer to something that is important, and that's something, a cause worth fighting for, if you will. Struggle is meaningless or feels meaningless when we're not seeing that go somewhere. Consistently fighting and struggling with your mother-in-law over how you parent your kids, it's not productive struggle, honestly. Like, at some point, you probably just need to have a conversation with that person and make some decisions and move on with your life. Move somewhere. Create some uncomfortableness in your life by having some conversations that need to be had. Don't use fear and reason or as hard as a reason. But think back to things like studying in school. Think back to if you ever have trained for a half marathon or you've done 75 hard or something like that, something where you were really working towards a goal, preferably with a group of people. And if you think back at those times, you probably think of them with really fond memories. I think about being in Korea and studying art, and man, I was up like all-nighters all the time. And I look back at that as one of the most beautiful periods of my life. I look back at having young babies and how hard it was. And then I also think, like, yeah, I would love to go back and hold my little baby. And how cool would it be if I now had this mindset where if I was going through that, and when I am going those difficult things, like, it was okay that it was difficult. Like, it wasn't something that I was trying to escape. My husband and I have this mantra that we don't use fear to make a decision. So we will factor in whether we believe that something is positive or negative. We will do the pros and cons list, but we're not allowed to put fear in there. So, for example, we're thinking of going to America, and there's a lot of decisions to factor up whether that makes sense and whether, like, financially that's viable, all of these different things. But we're not allowed to factor in that it's going to be scary to leave family. It's going to be scary to do something that is unknown, and it's going to be stepping out of a comfort zone and potentially doing something that, like, I don't think we'll regret it because I don't live my life that way, but that might not end up being where we want to be. But we won't know that until we try it. So we're not allowed to factor in the fact that it's scary. And that means that we can look at this in terms of what is actually important to us, not just through the context of fear. And I really like this idea of recognizing that your emotions and your feelings act upon you. They're kind of like the weather. I like to think about my brain is almost like a train station. And within the train station, there's all of these things going on. There's little market stall people, there's trains coming and going, and my emotions, whether I feel good or bad on any given day, is just a train. And the train sometimes comes barreling into the station, and it's basically wanting to, like, take me with it. But I have a choice, because I'm not the train. The train is in the station, but I am not it. I can go, you know what? I'm not gonna hop on that train. I'm gonna let it go on its merry way. Or even if it's sitting there, I'm still not gonna hop on. And I'm still gonna go and do the things that I need to do and I want to do. This helps me a lot to have distinction between what I feel about things and who I actually am. Even language-wise, you can change your language around these things to empower you more and use... This is how you really rewire the way you think about it. Remember how we talked about action is the thing, repetition is the thing that gets you changing. So make a practice. When you're starting to feel these feelings of, I feel, people use this all the time, and I'm guilty of it too, but I'm working very hard to start to move past this. I very much try to say, I don't say I feel overwhelmed, or it's overwhelming, because though that phraseology implies that I'm connected to a feeling. I'm overwhelmed. It's like saying I'm fat instead of I have fat. You aren't fat. You just have some. I'm a failure. No, you're not a failure. You have done things that you failed at. You're distinct from the failure. So I try very hard not to say I'm overwhelmed, and instead say, hey, there's a lot of things that my brain is thinking about right now. There's a lot. Because that's all overwhelm is. All overwhelm is that you're struggling to categorize all the many, many, many things that are competing for your attention. That's literally all it is. How much difference does it change the way and the responsibility that you take when you go, I have a lot of things on my mind right now, than saying I'm overwhelmed? What about stress? Let's take stress. I'm stressed. let's analyze that. Let's break down what that actually means. Hey, I have a lot of things that I have to achieve. I have a lot of deadlines. I have a lot of responsibilities. Yeah, okay, you probably do. Yep, great. Feeling like you can't cope with those things is a feeling, and maybe you can or maybe you can't, but the way that you can is going to be very much determined by how you think about it. So the action piece of this is to speak it out. Have things that you say to yourself. I say to myself, Charles, you're not overwhelmed, you just have a lot to think about. Charles, there's not always a problem happening. It's sometimes I wake up in the morning and I see something, a problem that's happened inside the business, content team, anything like that, and I'm like, oh, like every damn day there's something to figure out. And instead going, you know what, there's going to be problems because that's life. There's going to be something hard to deal with. I'm capable of doing that. I'm capable of dealing with this. And if not, I will fail and I will learn. And that's how we start to feel happy, because we realize and we let go of comfort and we go, you know what, just moving and increasing my surface like area, deciding who I want to be, not letting myself be ruled by my feelings, that's what allows me to move forward and be who I want to be. Ultimately, success comes to the fact that we don't quit. I like to think about this idea of, if I was to do X for a longer timeline, would there be any chance that I couldn't succeed? Another way to think about it is, if I were to do this, what I'm doing, would it be unreasonable that over a longer timeline, I wouldn't be successful? This comes to surface area as well. And I think about this a lot with dieting, where if I was to continue eating vegetables, if I was to continue to improve my habits, if I was to have a hard conversation with a waiter, if I was to stand up for what I wanted in terms of my diet, if I was to do that again and again and again for the next year, is there really any possibility that I couldn't succeed? Okay, so just do it then. Just do it longer. Because we actually win just by not quitting. This mantra goes through my mind constantly. Charles, you win because you don't quit. You win because you keep going. That success, all you have to do, literally, you don't have to succeed, you just have to keep going. Because the only time you fail is when you quit. And then I ask myself, hey, like, if I was to do what I'm doing for a longer timeline, would it be unreasonable that I wouldn't succeed? And if not, then I just got to do more of the right kind of thing. If I was to put out a YouTube video every single day and analyze that video every week and research topics on YouTube and talk to people and find out what is helpful for them, over the next 10 years, is there any reason, is there any possibility, if I was to do every single one of those things for 10 years, that I wouldn't be at 100,000 subscribers? No. Like, there's no way that that wouldn't happen, because I'm doing all the things that I need to do and I'm just not giving up. It's exactly the same for anything you're doing. We're just thinking about this on such a small timeline and we're going, if I don't see results, I'm going to quit. Lengthen your timeline, realize success is about not quitting, and then just do the damn thing every single day or however long that you need to do it. If you want to build significant muscle, then just go to the gym for three times a week for the next 10 years. The reason that you don't build significant muscle is not because your workout's not optimized. It's not because you are going three times a week instead of four. It's not because you hit a plateau. It's because you stopped when those things happened, when it got hard, when you couldn't do 3 days, so you decided that you weren't going to do any. Like, that's when things stopped. It's when you quit. And the cool thing about this ideology is that if you take this idea that it's okay to fail, then if you are doing it long enough and you don't quit, then you will always learn. At some point, you're going to learn what doesn't work by doing it. I've been building a new skill set over the past couple of months of trying to hire a superstar for our very small tight-knit team inside of Lean with Plants. And I have sifted through hundreds of applications of people. I have looked through hundreds of video introductions from people. I've done tens of interviews with people. And it's kind of funny when I think about it, because I'm like, for a long time, I'm starting to figure it out now. But for a long time, I just didn't know what I was looking for. I didn't know how to conduct an interview. I didn't know what kind of questions to ask. I didn't know what kind of things to be looking for in someone. And so I made a lot of choices that didn't end up with the result that I wanted to have. And the thing is, it's like, I'm a baby in this. The reason that I'm not very good at hiring people is because I haven't done it hundreds of times. I haven't hired someone as many times as I've put out a YouTube video or made a podcast. I've done it a fraction of the time. And there's someone that I follow who's amazing at hiring. She's a managing guru. She teaches people how to manage. And she says, the reason that I'm really good at this is that I've done it so much more than anyone else. I've done thousands, like literally thousands, like more than 2,000 interviews with people. How many applications would you have to read to do 2,000 interviews? I mean, you'd be damn good at it at that point. And so I think about this very, very often where I'm like, the only thing that is between me and success is repetition. So I just need to do the thing that leads to results over and over again. I just need to not quit. And it gives me so much assurance in my life because I don't have to see results instantly. I don't have to see success at every turn. I just have to make sure that I'm doing the things that are going to lead me there. And this is really cool when you think about coming back to luck surface area. I'm also thinking, well, how do I optimize that? Because it's not just repetitions. If we take this back to working out, like I want to build muscle. So if I want to build muscle, then yeah, I got to go to the gym. Like bare minimum, I got to go to the gym 3 times a week. I got to actually lift weights. I got to not give and I got to give up and I got to just keep doing this for the next few years. But what if I hired a coach? What if I had someone who could personally show me what kind of things would be best? Would I be more likely to succeed with that? Would I be more likely to get lucky? Yeah. Okay. What if I get some friends who also like to work out? What if working out becomes something that is normalized in my circle? Do you think that is going to make it more likely for me to do the things that get me there? What if I get a spotter? What if I get some cute gym clothes? What if I get around people? What if I read some books? I have the ability to increase my potential for success and my assurity of success. And then all I have to do is just not give up. Like, how cool is that? How empowering is that to go, hey, I'm just going to go, well, what's the next thing that I need to tick off to move me closer in this direction? It doesn't have to be a right or wrong decision, just something where I either learn or like I fail or I learn. Either way, I win or I learn. That's the phrase. I win or I learn. And this is really the only thing that builds evidence over time of a change in mindset, because mindset stems from what we believe to be true. Mindset really is just our view of truth for the world. And we don't change that by just suddenly having a paradigm shift. We change that by believing that change in how we view things is possible and then pushing back when we experience thoughts and feelings that contradict what we want to believe to be true or what we know to be true or what we decide is important to believe to be true. And if we make those decisions in a vacuum where you go, hey, I can objectively get or I can understand that success is really not about quitting. Even if I don't feel that for my own life, even if I feel like giving up, even if I feel like, well, that can be true for everyone else, but it's not for me. I can examine that thought process and I can go, you know what? That's really just a intrusive thought, if you will. It's asking me to believe a lie. And I don't have to act in a way like I do believe that lie, even if I feel like I want to believe it. It's having the ability just to distinguish yourself and then to make decisions that are contrary to old thought patterns and instead move you in the direction that you want to go. Another thing that I really have embraced is curiosity. Curiosity is a core value for me and it allows me to ask good questions. I think this is one of the most important things in my life because I can look at what data I need to have in order to make decisions. It allows me to expand my view of the world and especially of what's possible. It allows me to get around the kind of people that have more like surface area or they have more experience than I do. And when something is happening that is not taking me where I want to be, I have the ability to be curious rather than simply judging. Most people have a default mindset or a default thought pattern of judgment as opposed to curiosity. And it really keeps us stuck, because if we judge, then we're making a call that what we believe about something is the absolute and that there's no other alternative. So we really shut ourselves off from learning in that point. Think about it this way. If you were to hop on the scales and your weight is up 4 pounds, then you can look at that and go, oh, that's a judgment on me. I'm a failure. Boo-hoo. Therefore, everything I've done is worthless and I'm going to go and eat cake. I mean, that's a judgment. You've made a decision at that point that everything that you believe in that moment is true and that there's no option that it's not or an alternative, and therefore your behavior subsequently makes sense. Well, what if you did something different? What if you're like, huh, my weight is up. I wonder why. I wonder if it's the salt that I had extra. Huh, I wonder what factors go into weight overall. I wonder if this happens to anyone else. I wonder what will happen tomorrow if I'm consistent. I wonder what will happen next week if I stay consistent with this. Huh. I'm realizing that my weight on the scales feels like an indicative of my value. I wonder why I think that. I wonder what would happen if I acted in a way that, even though I believe that right now, was contrary to it anyway. Can you see how having curiosity allows you to actually look at the data and learn as opposed to staying in old patterns? I'm always asking myself, how can I be curious about this? What do I have to learn? How do I understand the situation more rather than just passing a blanket judgment on it without having any concept of fact? So I always have a bias now where I don't know. Like my bias would be, I really don't know until I have enough evidence. And I had to remind myself of that because I'm not naturally a very open-minded person, I don't think. But it's been hugely powerful for me because I'm starting to get around the right kind of people. I'm starting to ask the right kind of questions. I'm starting to go, well, hey, if I want to move forward in this area, what do I need to know? What do I need to read? What do I need to, who do I need to get around? What things do I need to invest in? If I fail, why was that? Do I need a commitment device? Do I need to have more accountability? What is it? Like I'm open to what works as opposed to passing a judgment on that without really having any data to support that. And then lastly, embracing being misunderstood. Hugely helpful as a content creator, I gotta say. But I heard this thing where it was like, don't try and be liked by people that don't like you. You don't have to be understood by everyone. You don't have to have everyone in your circle understand why you're vegan, understand the way that you parent your kid, support you. You don't have to. You put out something online and someone says it's cringe, it's okay that they think that. They don't have to understand the reasoning behind that. There's a content creator that I really like, and she did a sabbatical for a year. She's now come back to Instagram, and she has this idea that she wants to do things a little bit differently. She's getting a bit of pushback from that and producing videos, and people are saying, oh, like it's like your old videos and you're just falling back into old patterns. And I can see she'll talk about it online. I'm like, yeah, I can tell that this is eating you up, and I get it. Like, it would probably eat me up as well. But at the same time, it's like, you don't have to be understood by these people. Like, you don't have to have it in them get it. Like, it's nice to have people understand you, but it's not a right. It's not a necessity. Like, if you did things that you wanted to do and that you believed were worth doing, even if people misunderstood your reasonings, how freeing would that be? How freeing would it be to be like, you know what, I want to know what my progress is in the gym. I'm going to film my workout so I can know my progress. And people are going to think that I'm a narcissist. So what? They can misunderstand me. They can believe I'm a narcissist. That's all right. You don't have to feel it, by the way. Like, you can choose to act even if you do feel that way. I'm not saying do that. But imagine if you're like, you know what, I'm going to put out content because I want to do that. Or I'm going to wear this outfit because I want to. Or I'm going to eat the potatoes at work with the broccoli and people are going to think that I'm weird. But that's okay. Like, they don't have to understand where I get my protein from. They don't have to understand why I'm going on yet another diet. Like, so what if they get it? Like, does it matter to your life to be understood by every single person? I mean, hopefully you have some people in your life that understand you. And if you have one or two of those, then that's enough. You don't have to be liked. You don't have to be understood. It is extremely freeing to let that go. You don't even have to explain yourself. This has been really, really beneficial to me because it allows me to do the things that I know that I need to do for myself and my family without factoring in the judgment of others, without factoring in that they have to get it. And then a mindset that I'm working on. I'm really working on trying to appreciate the journey, because I have a to-do list a mile long. And if you're anything like me, then you don't like the messy middle. If you're on a weight loss journey, then you probably can't wait until you reach the other side and you're sitting on the beach in the bikini. And I get that, because I feel the same way. But we're never done. We're never finished. You're never going to feel like you have arrived. There's always going to be that next metric. There's always going to be that other thing that you're striving towards. Your life is happening right now. And I just want to take a second and just look around myself and realize, and look around this room and look at my outline in front of me and look at the fact that I can see this little red line going along as I record. And I'm like, yeah, this podcast's not done. And there's a million things on this Friday evening that have not been done off my to-do list. But I get to live this little life. And I get to be here today in your ears talking about mindsets. Like, I'm not where I want to be, but how flippin' cool is that? And you can do that for the second that you eat a broccoli, the first time that you go to the gym, the second time, the third time, the fourth time. You can do that mid-meal and realize, like, wow, like I'm eating the broccoli. I'm doing the thing. You're never going to be finished. We're never going to be done. So revel in the process, because the process is all there is. All there is to life is now. And we can do this by going, as much as I want to change, and as much as I believe that growth is possible, when I do these things today, even if I don't have the evidence yet that I have changed, I am the person who does that. We can find meaning in the here and now by doing these things today. That for me, I go, you know what? I am a successful business person because I didn't quit today. I am a podcaster because I recorded a podcast today. I am a great mom because I showed up for my kids today, even though my parenting is nowhere where I need to be and I just yelled at my kids. Appreciate the journey. So to recap on that, increase your luck surface area. Do things that get you lucky, and if not, you're actively choosing to not be lucky. Happiness and fulfillment is a byproduct. It's not the goal. Screw your feelings. They don't have to have meaning to you, or such huge meaning if you don't choose that they don't need to. You need to take consistent violent action and get your reps in if you want to get anywhere. Success is really just about doing this over and over again. Be curious about what's working and what's not, and embrace being misunderstood. I hope you found this episode helpful. And if you want help changing your behavior, then we have a program that does just that. This program works to increase your luck surface area by having mentorship, having coaching, having accountability, having an environment of successful people who are doing this alongside you, having inspiration, having a step-by-step guide and a plan to succeed. And we've seen hundreds of women lose weight inside of Lean with Plants over the past year. I'm so incredibly proud of the women inside of our program and the coaching, and honestly the program that we've created, because this is unlike anything I've ever seen in the weight loss space, because it's focused on behavioral change. It's focused on being able to take one step forward. And I truly believe that you are the hero of your own story, and maybe you just need the right toolkit. Maybe that's all it is. Maybe you just need someone else to be like, you know what, give it another go, get up again, you got this, keep going, and to do that long enough that it becomes default and it becomes who you are. So if that sounds like something that is important to you and you want to lose weight over the next year, and you want to 2024 2025, whatever year you're listening to this, I'm assuming we're going to still be doing the program years on, then hop on a call with my team. I'm going to put the link in the description and I will see you there, and we'll talk about whether it makes sense to work together. I'm going to leave it there, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day, week, whatever it is, and I'll see you next week again for another podcast episode. One more thing before we leave. I want you to take one tiny element, one tiny action step from what you've heard today and apply it in your life. Make a practice of starting to do it. It can be small. It can be mundane. It does not have to be perfect. Just get it started. And I'd love to hear, what does that look like for you? All right, this really is goodbye, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.